Stellar Fundraising Auctions presents Black Tie and Tails, brought to you by our partner Sojourn Ventures, featuring your co-hosts Greg Caroga and Devon Bell. Welcome to Black Tie and Tails, where two guys who love to talk for a living tell true tales of tantalizing testimony from the sometimes tragic, other times magic, world of fundraising auctions. I'm Greg Caroga, half of your co-hosting team, joined as always by my friend and co-host, Devon Bell.
Hello, all.
And however, wherever you are enjoying this podcast, we're glad you're here. Please be sure to do all the things, like, subscribe, interact. We would love to hear from you. We'd love to know what more we can do. Today, Devo, we're going to talk about ramping up because it's the very beginning of 2026. Got a whole fresh fundraising season ahead of us, which means right now in the beginning of January, it is consulting time.
That's right. That's right. Many of our clients we're going to talk to for the first time for this event and get the ball rolling, as it were.
And for events that are in February, we're like already down to the wire and we're wrapping stuff up. Yeah, but getting those auction lots finalized. And a big part of our role as Stellar fundraising auctioneers is to get involved with our clients and to offer as much consulting as we can in advance to help them ramp up. And we always say we don't bring a cookie cutter. We don't bring a rubber stamp. We're not out to make every auction over in our image, but we are out to lend as much expertise as we can to helping build a successful event. And one of the ways in which we do that is by engaging boards. Board engagement to go in and meet with the board and get them involved, like to hopefully energize them, right? But also to give them a direction, to give them guidance on how they can make the event successful. Because I always tell people, I'm not a silver bullet, right? You don't just load me up and you know, point me at your auction and go and boom, it's a success, right? Like what's the dirtiest little secret of fundraising? Fundraising auctions?
You tell me. There are many.
Who has the power in the relationship between us and the crowd?
Oh, that's right. We never want them to know that we actually don't have a paddle and have no way of making you raise yours.
Right. It's and so when it comes to making an event successful, getting the board on board is very important. Right. And I always tell any new organization who hires me, who's out of the Bay Area, who otherwise it would be a challenge for me to get to. First time I work with an organization, I will happily fly out and meet with you and your team and your committee and your board one time on me so that we can build that relationship. Because the last thing I want is to get on stage and have your board and your committee go, oh, yeah, I haven't seen this guy yet. Let's see how he is, right? Like what I want is like, oh yeah, this guy's great. I'm looking forward to this.
You need buy-in. I tell this to my clients right away, and I do the same, is if you want to have the board get together and have me come in,
yep,
and have a conversation, pep talk, whatever, it's buy-in from the board is huge on multiple levels.
Yep.
They need to believe in the event,
yep,
and not be rolling their eyes and saying, we're so sick of doing auctions. They need to help procure lots,
yep,
and be part of that and be the whales themselves in the fund of need. And they need to sponsor table, invite their friends and go to their friend's event with the same expectation that they have for their friends at their event. So
if I could summarize,
yeah,
bring in lots.
Yep.
Bring in bidders,
yep,
and show them the way.
There you go.
Those are the three things I always empower the board to do.
Yep.
And I was working with, I'll name them. I don't think anybody's going to be upset with this. The Housing Industry Foundation, on their event, their gala is big, 700 people. It's a very industry-facing event. And one of the challenges that we had had in years past was we had... there are sponsors who are buying tables who aren't bringing bidders. And there are people who aren't participating in the auction. And I'm not saying the board were those people, but we needed to emphasize and communicate more strongly the need to participate in the auction, right? We needed sponsors who were putting their tables together to be bidding, to bring bidders, to be participating in the auction. And so I show up at this board meeting. It's on a Wednesday afternoon in the beginning of summer. you know, we're there are events in September, so we're getting together probably in it might have been August, but we're getting together and Wednesday afternoon at the Sobrato Foundation, lovely foundation, beautiful office spaces. They support a lot of nonprofits in the peninsula and provide opportunities to have a place where you can have a board of 20 something people gather. And so we're all, you know, we're sitting to all, listen to all the presentations. It was very, it's very edifying for me to get to go sit and listen to all of the reports to the board as well, right? Like, I think it helps ground my knowledge in the reality of what an organization does. It helps give more in, like, it was valuable for me to be there. I'll just sum it up by that. But I, of course, I get put at the very end of the agenda. So they've been at it for an hour and a half, and I got up there.
You're the headliner, Greg.
I'm the headliner. There you go. And I got up there and I said, you know, look, here's the thing. Normally I would say I need you to bring in auction lots, but we're close to the auction, and B, your team's already done a great job, so you don't do that. But bring in bidders and show them the way. And the two of those things are really important. And to emphasize or illustrate how important showing them the way is, I, you know, and by that, I mean, I need you to bid on auction items. Doesn't mean you need to win them, but you need to be willing to pay if you do, right? Because if the auction starts and I turn to you and I'm like, hey, Devo, so, you know, how's little D doing in school, right? That sends one message versus the auction starts and I'm like, oh, wait, let me get this thing, right? Let me bid on this. And, oh, I lost, right? Like it focuses attention and import and importance in at your table differently. So I said, so in order to illustrate this, I brought this bottle of wine. It's a Howl Mountain wine. And I could go on about the, you know, the provenance of the vineyard or this particular year, or I could tell you that this is a bottle of wine that retails for $175, but I'm hoping by the time we say sold, none of that will be relevant. So we're going to start the bidding. All the money goes to you, right? Like Barbie, shout out to Barbie, executive director of the Housing Industry Foundation. All the money, Barbie's going to collect the money. It's going to go to the Housing Industry Foundation, but this is a bottle from my collection. Let's, you know, like I'll start the bidding at $10, right? So you can imagine bunch of 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, right? It goes boom, 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 boom. And it's like, and it's going, it's going, it's going. And it gets up to 170. And I say, okay, now this is the point where if he bids again, we cross the threshold of, we go beyond retail into irrational philanthropy. So if he bids again, you need to go crazy, right? And then I look at him and now you need to bid again. And he's like, oh, I'm in, you know, 180. And the crowd goes wild. And somebody else bids 180. And then back to him at 200. And the thing sells for 200. And it's this amazing moment of energy and action in the room. And I said, okay, everybody, do you feel this, right? Like, and yes, his bid of 200 is exciting, right? But let's back up to where we had six people in with your paddles up in the 50, 60, 70 range and how exciting that felt and what sort of momentum that created in this room. I said, look, we're in a boardroom on a Wednesday afternoon, but for just a moment, everything shifted and we were doing something completely engaging.
Sure.
And that can be your auction if you get the right people in the room and get them to engage.
Not just getting the right people in the room, but you be those people as well.
Yeah. And I will say to this board's credit and this auction's credit, they brought new people to the auction the night of, and it did well. It was notably more exciting in the auction this year.
What a great idea by you to illustrate how, see how this guy won the bottle of wine, but who won was everyone that was part of that kind of peak moment.
Yeah.
And who won was Housing Industry Foundation.
Yep.
Who benefits from crossing over the line into irrational philanthropy.
Yep.
So an auction, you captured the essence of an auction and what we're trying to get out of every single one.
And it's all part of ramping up. And another part of ramping up is finding the right auction lots for your auction. And sometimes you need a trip.
This episode is sponsored by Sojourn Ventures Travel, a boutique travel company helping nonprofits raise more through curated, risk-free travel packages designed for auctions and fundraisers. with personally vetted destinations from Bali, Italy, Spain, and beyond, and full support from start to finish, Sojourn Ventures makes fundraising seamless and impactful. Learn more at sojournventurestravel.com.
Greg, well, I think, Greg, that your idea to auction off a bottle of wine to the board to get emotional buy-in, to give them a sense of how it's going to be, to train them, right? How that kind of energy you want from them and the people they invite was such a good idea. The process of consulting is complex, especially if you're involved with the board, because there are many people.
Yep.
It's not a switch to this. It's all a dial, and some things go well and some things go less well. And we, as the auctioneer, have to navigate a bunch of different personalities. People who want you there, people who don't want you there. We wanted someone else, or they didn't want to do an auction this year, or this is the person who brought you in and they're your biggest cheerleader, and they, right, they're going to convince everybody. So one of the things I would say
that was an emotional roller coaster right there. I lived all of those experiences. Yeah, pretty
much. They love you. They hate you. They'll keep you forever. They need to dump you this year. One of the things that we have to do, and the board has to do as well as we plan for this, is navigate it. And that changes every year. The event will be different. The lots will be different. Maybe the board is different, right? The expectations are different. And so sometimes that can be, as Craig likes to say, very politic, it can be challenging. Let's say it like that. I will give you an example. I was working for an organization, and there was somebody on the board who was absolutely a stalwart, you know, and absolutely was one of your golden, perfect people who is there for you. And, you know, these are your people who do a lot as planning the event. And they also are one of the lead donors at the Fund of Need. And they also donate a lot. And then that night they win a lot, and they win two more lots in the silent. And they sponsor a table and bring all their friends who they expect to raise their paddle. So we know, and we've said many times, that those people are absolutely crucial to the success of your event.
Super supporters.
It doesn't matter if you have 200 people or 400 or 600. If you don't have these 25, you don't have an event. So they're hugely important. And in this case, this person was, and sponsored multiple tables and filled it up with donor friends who were expected to give, and went out on a limb at the Fund of Need, and I think we went out at 50 and they gave 75. So whatever they're going to do, that is a big thumbs up yes for, you know. And so one of the things they wanted to do was a buy-in dinner, very high end, very nice wines, great chef, and it was going to be, you know, what, $2,500 a head. It was a lot of money. And so before the event, like day of, we sat down, make sure we have everything together, because a buy-in, especially at that level, you want to make sure,
right,
you know, all your T's are crossed and I's are dotted. So they proceeded to tell me that they had sold a bunch of spots already at the event, and that these people would, and when we do a buy-in, we often do, here's how much it is per person. If you want more than one, do fingers, right?
Right,
do,
yeah, sure.
Four or two or whatever.
And if you only want one, you don't have to give me the finger.
Yeah, right, exactly. I bet you use that line. And so they told me, okay, you know, that there's 16 spots. I think we can do 18, but we already have 10 of them sold. And if the price raises, these people, you know, are not going to have the raised price, but they already know that. And so these paddles are going to go.
Sounds complicated.
These paddles are going to go up.
Buy-ins are complicated already. This right. sounds buy-ins more are, complicated.
Buy-ins are already scary. And
yeah.
It's already, there's just rampant cheating and craziness and lots of us trying to train the crowd on short notice, and it can just be chaotic. And which is why we love.
Why we love them.
Why we love them, and why we love when it's 10 spots. Well, it's 10 spots, but we could take 12.
Right.
We love having a little squishiness around the edges, because it always is chaotic. Anyway, so they tell me, you know, that when the time comes that these people are going to raise their, this person's going to raise their paddle for two spots, and this person's going to raise their paddle for four spots. And right, and I like you said, I'm thinking, I got a bad feeling about this, Chewy.
And how are you going to keep track of all this?
Yes, exactly. So when the moment came and I explained this wonderful dinner, but but there's only this many spots. So who's in? And you have to exhort people to raise their paddle and leave it up because they're half paying attention and they'll drop their paddle, whatever. So when that happened, the paddles went up and the amounts, the numbers of just bore no resemblance to what we had talked about. It's just, it was, so I'm flying blind. So we go along and you know how you get, I think I'm close to the number.
Right.
All right. Freeze it right there.
Right.
And you know, the thing where you freeze it right there. And as you start seeing paddles out of the corner of your eye, you see a paddle go up. And so I saw that happen and I went along, and when I got to that lady, I'm like, I'm going to hold off on you. And I kept counting.
Oh, I bet she loved that.
I go across it. Right. Cause if you're ready to put in $2,500 for dinner, you want to be at the damn dinner.
Right.
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 So, I went across, past her,
and it probably doesn't feel like cheating to her. Right.
No,
she probably,
no.
I mean, like, bidders wait until they hear, like, some bidders want to be smart and wait until they hear what the price is going to be, and then I'm like, oh, I'll commit to that.
Yeah.
Right. But that's the antithesis of what we're trying to do in that moment.
Right. And they're also at a table making chitty chat and eating dinner.
Yeah. Yeah.
To us, it's the most important thing in the world.
Right.
This is just one part of their party. So I go across the room, and I skip her, and I'm counting some more. And as I come back the other way, I make eye contact with her, and she looks like she wants to kill me. She looks like she wants to kill me.
You make eye contact, she makes dagger contact.
All the laser beams of her eyes hitting me. And so I actually looked over at my recorder and I said, I'm going to go ahead and take her. And like, I figured if there's trouble in the back end, this is on you. And so we got through it as one does in these things. And at the wrap, what I told them was, I understand that, it's incredibly generous to do this dinner, and it's wonderful also to pre-stock it with a bunch of people. And right. But, and if things went bad, I absolutely will fall on the sword, and you can blame the auctioneer. He messed it up, but that they should just know that with that level of chicanery, that there's almost bound to be some sort of trouble. So I guess all that in the long auctioneer way to say is that as you, get buy-in from the board, you need to navigate them and their proclivities
and that's, I mean, that big donor, like somebody that's making offerings at that level, generous, appreciate that wholeheartedly.
God bless them.
B is used to having control of things at a certain level. And when you're planning on something like that, working with somebody like that can be challenging from our perspective, because I appreciate them going out and getting the bids in advance.
Hell yes.
The twist I would make on that, or the takeaway I would take from that is, to have them get people pre-committed without guaranteeing them the spot. To say to them, look, here's the deal. If the price needs to go up, it needs to be like equitable. Like, one of the things that we love about buy-ins is that they make an otherwise they make egalitarian, or at least make auctions feel egalitarian in what is by definition not an egalitarian setting. And so they at least put 12 people on equal terms, and saying that, oh, seven of those people are going to be locked in, and then the other five have to pay a price that goes up. That's challenging, right?
To use
the politic word. Sure. So, I mean, I think one of the takeaways is, like, when somebody is that committed to making their thing a success, say, that's great. Let's trust the process.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, even if they were going to raise the price with the other people, because you're right, that's a strange two-tier thing. Mm. It's just that whole thing I explained, there are too many moving parts there.
Yeah,
there's too many moving parts.
Yeah. And again, I wholeheartedly appreciate when a donor comes to me and says, here is this thing, it's worth this, and I've got this person lined up to bid on it.
Oh,
or here is the thing, and I've got this many spots, and I've already filled X amount of them, right? Like, we appreciate donors who are trying to help us be more successful. It's just that we need to, in that planning process, try to uncomplicate it.
Right. Like you said, they are angels, and we love them, and we wouldn't want to replace them for the world. But as far as the actual X's and O's of how it's going to go when we auction things off in the event, put some trust in us, because we've done hundreds of these.
one of my favorite ramping up stories like that is back in the day when I used to work with Sun Valley Wine Auction. I did that event. We got this new board, this new auction chair who came in, and you know, there is a sometimes overt sense of competition from one chair to the next.
Absolutely.
Right? Like so often a chair will step up and be like, I've got a top last year, I've got to do this. And this particular chair was very much like, I am going to top everything that's ever been done. And bless him, right? Okay, let's go. What you got? And he says, okay, I have big auction lot, 40 people, any location in the United States. Gonna fly in a Michelin star chef, gonna pair dinner with wines from five vintners, and at the end of the auction, at the end of the dinner, this private dinner, Lady Antebellum is gonna perform a private concert. Okay, wow, that, you know, sounds like an amazing auction lot. What do you think it's gonna be worth? He says $300,000. Now, keep in mind, the previous year, nothing sold for over $125,000. This is a ginormous leap in expectation of value. I said, okay, great. Who's going to buy it? Oh, Mike Smith. Oh, okay. Well, who's going to bid Mike Smith up? Oh, Dave Jones. Oh, okay. And so we did all of, again, appreciate the level of machination that went into this in advance, like went through this whole thing. You have to make sure that when you get to 300,000, it lands on Mike and not on Dave, right? Okay, sure, fine. Like, and this is where Dave is sitting and this who Dave is. And then make sure like, and so before the auction starts, I establish like, okay, this is, you know, get to know Dave, get to know Mike, you know, get to see where Mike is going to be, all this stuff, work all this stuff through, all like totally overcomplicated, but in a good way, right? Like you don't want to throw something out there, say it's worth 300,000 and then have it sell for 50 because nobody bid against Mike, right? I get it. But pitch the lot, start selling it. I never even have to look at Dave.
Other people are interested.
Other people are interested. Yep. Other people are interested to the point where it gets to 300 and the other bidders are like, nah, F Mike, we're in at 310. And I didn't jump to 25s.
That's a great problem to have.
I didn't jump to 25s because I really wanted to keep the real bidders engaged. I didn't want to have to look to Dave. And so they're in at 310. And so suddenly it's back to Mike. And Mike looks at me like, what are you doing, dude? And like looks at the other bidders and realizes, oh, it's not Dave. And he's like, fuck. And so he winds up bidding 320. And so a couple of things, you know, best laid plans of mice and men and all that. But also, it really underscored the value of a high-end auction lot in engaging bidders, in elevating the expectations and participation of your crowd, right? Like those bidders who were bidding 310 were bidders I knew from doing that event for a decade at that point. They weren't new. They were existent.
They had never had the opportunity to bid that much on anything before.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I've seen that happen on different scale at multiple events over the years. So in ramping up for your auction that's coming up, sometimes it's advisable to reach for the stars, to go for that big lot. If you can also have like as a litmus test, right, for your crowd to see what happened. And sometimes it doesn't work, right? I could tell a story about where we went out on a limb and got the trip to the Masters and the crowd was like, yeah, no, we're not going to spend 15,000 on that.
And golf is one of those ones where some people in the crowd, that's their favorite thing. Some people in the crowd, I wouldn't take it if you gave it to me for free.
Yeah. Or private island, same event. We did a Masters and we did a private island, which are both consignment packages. And they were both felt risky and they both flopped. And the following year we came back and we did lower level consignment packages and they did better. I think it's excellent to use high-end lots as a litmus test for your crowd or as a way of managing your crowd's expectations and participations upwards, right?
Yeah. And, you know, the ceiling on something like that is magnificently good, 320.
Right.
Right?
Right.
That's probably like, right, a third of the take for the whole damn thing.
It was up there.
Yeah,
it was definitely up there. Yeah, it's a good guess. And sometimes the planning process has changed a lot post pandemic. It used to be, I mean, now everything's on Zoom, right?
It used to be with a bunch of moms at a Starbucks.
Right.
Yeah.
Or somebody's house.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
In ramping up for, and it's been long enough, I can tell the hill. It's a Hillcrest story. Hillcrest, I love Hillcrest. Hillcrest School. You've done Hillcrest.
They're peerless.
We've had our fair share of Hillcrest. And this would have been 15 years ago, at least. So every meeting was in person, right? We used to spend a bunch of time driving all over the place and meeting in person. Every meeting's in person. And this meeting's 8:30 in the morning in Oakland. So I've got to be up and showered and out of the house by 7:30 to get over to Oakland for this 8:30 meeting. And I get there a little bit early. So I go grab a coffee at a cafe and I show up and I'm knocking on the door. This, you know, lovely hill, lovely, Eastern Oakland Hills home. And
mean streets.
And I'm knocking on the door, and John, Monica's husband, answers the door, and he's like, "Hey," and Monica goes walking by in a bathrobe, and the kids are all like still getting ready for school, and he's like, "What are you doing here, Greg?"
8:30 does seem like a weird time in the morning for a meeting.
And I was mortified.
Oh God!
Because it looked unnecessarily suspicious. I mean, and part of our job is to like you said, us at a Starbucks with a table full of moms,
yeah.
or sitting around a boardroom with a bunch of young women. The people who work in the nonprofit space are disproportionately women. Right.
Oh yeah.
That's just the way it is.
The face of philanthropy, actually, right. Amongst the donor class. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, part of our role, or my role as a consultant, is always to approach my role as a respectful expert. Right. Like, I am bringing to you expertise that we are hopefully going to utilize to evaluate decision making without being a dictatorial dick. Right. Like my goal is not to come in and like, blah, 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 is the way it should be. Right. So to show up in the morning and have it be like, to have all of a sudden, like all of my role, like thrown into this weird question of like, what are you doing here? I was like,
what in God's name?
I pulled out my phone and looked at the calendar and I was like, oh my gosh, John. I mean, I don't even remember if it was on my phone at that point or whatever. And I was like, oh my God, I got the time wrong. I'm early. I was just like, that's the only thing that made sense. I got the time wrong. I'm early. And I'm like, I'll be back. And I went and called Jacqueline.
That was smart to just leave for an hour.
Yeah.
Because the sitting around she gets dressed listening to the grandfather clock tick in the living room.
And the kids. You know, no, there's no invader. Like, no. And morning chaos with any family, especially two young kids getting off to elementary school. I mean, oh my gosh. Just like, but I mean, just to this day, you know, oh, yuck, you have your most embarrassing moments in your life.
Oh, yeah.
That one's top five.
That one's
up there with summer after sixth grade, getting set up with a girlfriend at summer camp in Florida, only to find out that the guy lied to me and she really wasn't interested.
Oh,
right. Like it doesn't top that. But in terms of like just sheer mortification and embarrassment, it's up there. It's up there.
If those are your worst ones, you're not doing too bad, buddy.
Yeah, those are the worst ones I can share in public.
<There you go. laughs> That are within legal bounds.
Yeah, there's some stories that are better kept in the dark recesses of. So, ramping up, takeaways. I mean, I think one of the takeaways is for you, and that is that we participate in advance on your event, and more often than not, you're not taking full advantage of our services. So if you want us to come in and present to your board or meet with your committee, that's what we do. Like, people always thank me, like, oh my gosh, like, no, it's what I do. It and in the end run, it's selfish because it makes our job easier.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you saying about how the look has been so different post COVID in a way that's beneficial to both you, the organization, and us as the auctioneer, instead of driving an hour to a Starbucks and it's loud and echoey and everyone's got to get somewhere, it's a Zoom. And no, Zoom is not as good as in person.
Yeah.
But for many tasks, it's plenty good enough.
And I'll come in person to a board. I mean, we'll come in person to a board meeting. It's with, you know, within driving distance of our homes in the Bay Area, but always happy to jump on a Zoom.
I'm happy to auction off a bottle of Greg's wine to show them how it goes.
Come raid my cellar anytime. It's a very small cellar, but apparently it's a big cellar. But I'm bumped. And also in terms of like ramping up, I think part of it is to look ahead and embrace. Oh, well, I'm just making stuff up at this point. I was going really far on that.
Well, then just so you know. You told that Lady Antebellum story already.
I figured.
And a previous, thing. I'm pretty sure when you started, I'm like, he's just going to say Lady Antebellum and it sold for 320.
Just cut it off.
Yeah, whatever. We'll figure it out. I think, Greg, another part of this that you touched on, and it's just spot on, which is that as far as the specifics of what's going to happen, you know, we can plan and plan and plan, and then the event will have its way with us. Mm. But when we talk about meeting with the board and ramping up, what we're talking about is like a vibe of buy-in.
Yeah.
Right. And what we want is enthusiasm and people who are pro the auction and support the auction are excited about the auction. And we can't make sure that everything goes perfectly, but we can make sure that people's heads are in the right place and that everyone's on the same team pushing in the same direction when it comes to the event and the auction specifically.
And from, beautifully put, and from a donor perspective, like, it's important to get people to commit. But let us be the ones who say sold.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's right. You need buy-in from them. And part of the buy-in is buy-in that the auctioneer knows what he's doing.
And if you are going to, but I mean, you know, and sometimes they're like, oh, we're going to sell these. Like if you've got room for 20 people and you've already sold 12, great. Then we have room for 8.
Yeah.
Right. Like we have room for 8 and those 8 people are going to be in the room. If you've got room for 20 people and you've already got 12 pre-committed and they're going to raise their paddles the night of, that's even better because then that's momentum. That is a vibe to be part of. Right. So, you know, I mean, part of it is, you know, like, let us say sold though. Don't let us say like that. That's like the one part of my job. Like, you know, like,
just, can I at least say sold, please?
Can I be the one that says sold? And what else did we talk about? Oh yeah. Well, you know, like, just look at your calendar and show up on time. That's a takeaway for me more than anything else.
Time change.
Yeah, that would have been a good line too, right? Oh wait, so spring forward. I still haven't set my clock, John. I'm sorry. Well, thank you, listener, as always, for joining us for this episode of Black Tie and Tails. We hope you, we appreciate you, and hope the kickoff of 2026 treats you and yours well. Hit that like and subscribe. Please comment or send us emails or connections. We would love to hear from you. And honestly, like, if you send us something, we'll respond to it.
It'll be in the stack.
Yeah. As always, you can find our podcast on Apple, Spotify, Google, YouTube, and all your favorite podcast distribution channels. You can also find it at blacktieandtails.com. Until next time, always remember to use your powers for good.